I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social. This is Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast.
That King Cole, he loves a goal, and loves a goal does he. He scores with his left and he scores with his right, and a header makes it three. He wanted more, he went for four by scoring a penalty, but a childish fight over who had the right from the spot was sad to see. Palmer's perfect Premier League hat-trick gave Chelsea fans a smile and me a rhyme, and Gareth Southgate a serious decision to make. With four goals in a 6-0 win and now joint top goal scorer in the league this season, surely Germany soon come for the midfield maverick. Everton battered, beaten, bruised and back in the battle to survive. Goal difference dashed, squad sliced down, and with Nottingham Forest to face on Sunday. Dark times for Deitch. This is Football Social Daily, the award-winning Premier League podcast. Hit subscribe or follow now, and that way you'll never miss an episode. My name's Niall, joined as always by Joel Tudor and Marley Anderson. Morning, boys.
Good morning. What a superb intro. I mean, that's worth the 12 hours you spent writing it and rehearsing it.
12 minutes, I think.
Yeah, I know. How art thou this morning?
To be honest, using a child's nursery rhyme seems quite fitting considering the behaviour we saw with those Blues players squabbling over that penalty last night. Let's start there, because when you're 4-0 up in a Premier League football match and you think that everything's under control and you feel as a supporter your team is finally starting to show signs that you've been waiting for all season, and then the players go and do that, it's proper facepalm stuff.
Facepalmer. That was an open goal you missed there. I'll slot that one in for you. The lethal from that range, me. It was funny because I watched it and, you know, I was ready to... I was thinking, we're going to have to just talk up Cole Palmer tomorrow, but... Then this little spat happened, and it's kind of, took away from the result, really, because that's what people are talking about. And I thought, you know, I wonder if we should kind of gloss over it a bit. But that's the main talking point now, from a 6-0 win where one of your star players scored four goals. But then I was thinking about it, and what we didn't learn much. We learned that Chelsea are capable of doing it. And we didn't, like, we already knew that. We learned that Cole Palmer's a very good player and scores loads of goals. We already knew that. And we learned that Everton are crap, and we already knew that. So the fight becomes the main talking point, and it was ridiculous. Like, absolutely, it actually made me a bit mad, because I'm like, just thinking, Cole Palmer has scored 8 penalties out of 8 this season before that one last night, so I made it 9 out of 9. Is your top scorer in the league. He's took every penalty you've had. Why on earth is Nonny Madueke and Nicholas Jackson, who couldn't score, he has to have all his goals on a plate for him. Why are you... What gives you this, like, ego? Where have you got this from? What right do you have to take a penalty? Nonny Madueke is only in the team every couple of weeks. Nicholas Jackson gets dropped every time you need to score a goal. And starts... you know, misses more chances than he scores. It's absolutely mental, but Dele Alli summed it up incredibly well in the Monday Night Football studio when he said that, why are they all fighting to take a penalty at 4-0? I didn't see any of them fighting to take a penalty the other week when Man United, when they were turning it around against Man United in the last minute. And I just thought, that has put this argument to bed in a box in an absolute nutshell, because that is perfect.
I guess it's easy to take that responsibility on your shoulders when you're guaranteed the 3 points and it doesn't really matter if you miss. You mentioned we haven't learned anything new, Marley, but what did we learn about that situation? Did we learn that this Chelsea squad have egos that Pochettino needs to deal with, and maybe that's a reason as to why they've not been as successful as they could have been this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually thought that was the biggest lesson we've learned in the game. As I said, we already knew Everton are a poor team. We already knew that Chelsea have potential. But the issues we raised at the start of the season where they went and spent all this money and then we all said it's going to take a while for them to gel and to get to know each other, and you know, they might not even like each other and it might spill over onto the pitch. All of a sudden we're seeing Chelsea in April and they're, what, ninth in the league, or you know, closing in on possibly seventh with a win in the game in hand and stuff. And then that happens on the pitch and it just, it gives you an amazing little insight into what Chelsea's like, because the two guys that had their head screwed on, Thiago Silva, who's nearly 40, and these lads are old enough to be his son, some of them, and Conor Gallagher, who's genuinely Chelsea through and through, wearing the captain's armband and trying to sort out this situation. Meanwhile, Cole Palmer's trying to do his job and he's having to physically push Nicholas Jackson away from the ball because somehow Jackson's got this ego of, oh, this is an easy game, so I'll go and fill my boots, I'll stat pad, just like he did against Spurs when he scored 4 against 9 men.
I totally agree, because the only reason those two players, Madueke and Jackson, wanted to take the penalty was because they've thought Cole Palmer's already got 3 goals, he doesn't need another one, but I quite fancy one. Whereas actually, I thought it was great captaincy from Conor Gallagher to grab those two players by the scruff of the neck and say, do you know what? Do one. You're not on penalties. Cole Palmer's on penalties. And we need the points. And they were secure at that point anyway, because of course that was Cole Palmer's 4th goal and the result was already beyond doubt. But goal difference this season in the Premier League, as we'll come on to when we talk about Everton, might be vital. And why would you not want to secure another goal? There's no guarantee that if Jackson or Madueke took it that it would go in. I guess there's no guarantee that if Palmer took it, it would go in. But with his record this season, immaculate, 100% from 12 yards, of course he should have taken it. And I'm glad he did.
See? I'm glad he won that. I'm glad common sense prevailed. It looked a bit iffy at one stage, obviously, when Madueke had the ball and then Jackson somehow decided to stake his claim for it as well. But it's not the first time it's happened to Chelsea this season. If you remember, the very first penalty Chelsea got this season, Raheem Sterling had a very similar spat with Cole Palmer and Palmer won that little argument, whatever it was. I don't even know. I think at that point, Chelsea didn't actually have a penalty taker because it was the first one of the season, if I remember rightly. But Palmer won that battle and got the ball rolling by scoring the penalty, and he's been on pens ever since. But so, you know, if you're going to mess around at 5-0 or 4-0, and with a penalty taker, let Petrovic take it, the goalkeeper. Fully take the mick, you know what I mean? But as you say, there's things to play for Chelsea. Their goal difference now is 9. Man United's is -1. So if they'd won that game 1-0, there's only that would mean Chelsea's was 4 versus Man United's -1. And that can be reversed. That is a one-game swing. For example, if Man United won 3-0 and Chelsea lost 2-0, that's gone. That goal difference has crumbled then. But because they've won 6-0 and now it's 9, that's at least 2 games, possibly 3, in terms of swing for that goal difference to level out. So absolutely, just secure the points, score as many goals as you can. And Cole Palmer scored as many goals this season as Erling Haaland, who he left in the summer to back himself. And fair play, because he should be on the plane now and he should be more than on the play, he should be playing minutes because he didn't play in the Brazil and Belgian games, which was a waste of time. So if he keeps scoring like this, he can't be ignored.
We'll talk more about Palmer and his potential spot on the plane for the Euros with England this summer in a second. But just finally on this penalty spat, Joel, Maurizio Pochettino in his post-match interview said he was happy with the result, as you would be as a manager with a 6-0 win. But it was dampened slightly by that squabble over the penalty kick. If you were Pochettino, would you have hooked off Nicholas Jackson and Noni Madueke for that sort of behaviour?
No, because I think the responsibility falls on Pochettino anyway. If he's not designated a penalty taker, then that sort of thing's going to happen.
He did, though. He said after the game as well.
Yeah, his designated taker is Cole Palmer. And I think that shows actually the players going against the manager. I think that shows not only internal squabbles between players, but also I think that's a massive lack of respect towards the manager, the way that they've acted.
Yeah, and because Cole Palmer's the younger one as well, I doubt if it was, you know, one of the senior players in the squad that would have tried doing it. And I just think it just undermines both of
them. Well, Sterling tried it at the start of the season.
Well, Palmer plays every game. Even though he's young, he still counts as a senior player in my eyes because he plays every single game. Madueke doesn't.
No, I know it doesn't matter though because he's the younger guy, so they probably think it's easy to push him over and take the ball and get a nice little stat pad towards the record. But it's an annoying one because he just completely shrouded over a really good performance from Chelsea, one that we've not really seen a lot this season. But like Cole Palmer said at the end of the game, is one of those that gets brushed under the carpet in the dressing rooms quite quickly. They probably all look at each other in the dressing room thinking, what on earth were we doing? You know, 6-0. This is one of our better games, our better moments of the season. They've had a lot of bad moments. So what's the point in trying to create conflict over nothing? And they'll learn from it as well. I think Pochettino might have actually liked that, just to see a little bit of care on the pitch maybe, and actually they really want to go ahead and have a little bit of competitiveness, let's say, because they ended up sorting it out between them anyway. Although it was a bit of a scramble, they sorted it out, which is what happens and what should happen, and they'll learn from it as well, because Pochettino at the end of the game probably told them, or if that keeps happening, one of you is coming off and that's it. Like, you don't want the fans to be seeing that and the whole world talking about that moment over Palmer scoring 4 goals, which is ridiculous in itself. But yeah, like you both mentioned, Cole Palmer, if he never left City, wouldn't even be talking about him at all in this kind of capacity. So fair play to him for taking the leap. Named after Andy Cole, by the way.
Yeah, of course. Comes from a family of Manchester United fans. I just heard baby Harry screaming in the background, Marley. I guess he thinks that Cole Palmer should go to the Euros as well, no?
No, he wanted the penalty. he wanted the penalty, and I'd have backed him to score it as well, because everything else went through Everton's defence like a knife through butter, wasn't it? They were awful.
Yeah, we'll talk about Everton in the next section of FSD, but let's focus on Cole Palmer. The first goal, nutmegs an Everton defender, chops it onto his left, just bends it perfectly past Pickford into the corner. The second, a header, continuing his run after it was deflected off the goalkeeper. To complete the hat trick, a dink over Jordan Pickford, another good finish, and then just to add the icing on top, another goal, this time from 12 yards out. This is a player who people were suggesting is in good enough form to go to the Euros a month ago, 2 months ago, and he's done it all season. I totally understand that. But in terms of the fact that the Euros is fast approaching, people were saying Cole Palmer might well deserve a spot on the plane. Back-to-back Stamford Bridge hat-tricks, never been done before in the Premier League era by a Chelsea player. Think of all of the great players they've had, Joel. Has that performance last night against Everton given Gareth Southgate no option but to choose Cole Palmer? Does he now have to go to the Euros?
Yeah, if you're scoring 20 Premier League goals as a non-striker, that's like Lampard territory in terms of those kinds of numbers. You have to take him. I think it's more so a case of, does he get in the starting 11? For me, I don't think he does, because then you have to sacrifice either Foden or Bellingham for him to put in their place, and I just don't think he is better than them two. But it's so good to have someone else who has that kind of output. Granted, I think he's got, what, like 9 Premier League goals from the spot. It's hard enough scoring from the spot, but that does take away from just how prolific he is, in my opinion. But it's great to have someone with that kind of output, because Harry Kane can't do it all on his own. And then when you're seeing Phil Foden scoring and putting up so many great numbers, Jude Bellingham, one of the top scorers in La Liga, we've got goals coming from everywhere behind Kane as well, which I think sets us
except
up
Marcus
so
Rashford,
well.
Except Marcus Rashford, who will probably start.
Stop bringing in Man United. Yeah, you've already done
I
it once.
Who cares? Palmer has to go, and on form, we've got so many players in that in them sort of supporting Harry Kane positions. And on the season, you know, Marcus Rashford just can't go. But he definitely will.
Yeah, but didn't we do the teams and we managed to find space? There's room at the inn for Marcus Rashford. Like, there's plenty of room at the inn. I'm just taking into account the last tournament. I just think that Marcus Rashford offers something that the England team might need in the latter stages of the competition, which is just transition, quick transition, because we know for a fact if England gets to the semi-finals or the quarter-finals and we come up against France or one of the better sides, you can hedge your bets England are sitting back. And then who are we going to need to try and break through a really good team like that? Someone who's quick on the counter-attack. And I don't think you can name me one player we've got in attack who can do it better than Marcus Rashford in terms of counter-attacking. And that's the only reason why I think it's almost essential to have him as a weapon going forward.
Did you see Anthony Gordon's threat on the counter-attack when we beat 4-0, Spurs 4-0 at the weekend?
Give over.
Were you awake for that one, or were you preparing for your 2-2 against Bournemouth later that day?
Anthony Gordon will never put the numbers Marcus Rashford's done in a transition team ever in his lifetime.
I think he's got more than five times as many goals this season. How many has Rashford got this season? Is it three?
I'm not talking about last season. I'm talking about... Marcus Rashford in the World Cup was one of the best players there, and he played about flipping 30 minutes.
Marco van Basten was very good in the 88 World Cup. He can't kick a ball now.
That's one of the worst analogies I've ever heard.
All in the past. All in the past. You've got to go on.
Where's he pulled that from? I can't see your point, but that's a terrible description.
It's Joel, the Man United fan, talking about the past. I mean, it's as nailed on as anything. He used to be
forgetting
good.
Though. He used to before be the World Cup, Marcus Rashford was in such poor form, hence why he never started. You remember after it, he ended up putting up numbers like Mbappe. Prior to it, he was so poor. It was January to the March, April time. But before that, he didn't start because he was being poor. He wasn't even really getting in the Man United team, but he still went because England have a knack of going ultra defensive when it really matters.
But he still went because there was no Anthony Gordon, there was no Cole Palmer. These players 100%.
Weren't... I think this is the one tournament where Marcus Rashford is probably the one who's going to be a 50-50 now. And that's only because there's so much competition for his place. Maybe in the World Cup, it was only really Grealish that was rivaling his place, you would say. Palmer will go to answer the first question. Palmer will go to the Euros, but I don't see him getting into the starting 11.
I think that's a fair comment just based off of the fact that, as Marley said, he played no minutes in the last international break. So I think that that's a fair assessment there, Joel, to be honest with you.
As long as he plays minutes, though.
The failed left winger, in the words of Troy Deeney.
So Cole Palmer with a virtuoso performance at Stamford Bridge, ensuring that Chelsea win 6-0. And a really detrimental result for Sean Dyche's Everton side. We'll talk about just how damaging that could be for the Toffees, who are in a real sticky situation, next on Football Social Daily. This is the award-winning Premier League podcast, Football Social Daily, FSD. Hit subscribe or follow and you'll never miss an episode again. Links to our social media channels are in the description below, as is the link to the free-to-join Telegram group, so give that a click and come and join the conversation. And no doubt plenty of conversation over the next few days in the Premier League will be about Everton and their capitulation at the hands of Chelsea yesterday. They started the game well, Sean Dyche said after the game in his post-match interview. They finished it horrendously. Not only were they battered 6-0, but they picked up a host of injuries and their goal difference has been cut down dramatically. And to compound all of that, who have they got the weekend? Nottingham Forest, a relegation rival. Honestly, Joel, when you think things couldn't get worse for Everton, with points deductions, questions over ownership and takeover, loans needing to be repaid with a deadline of midnight last night, and still everybody's in the dark about the future of the football club, they then go and lose 6-0. Everton have had a few dark days over the last few years, but that was one of the worst I can remember.
I saw somewhere saying that 160 million was still outstanding. I don't know if that all needed to be paid the other night, but that's quite a transaction to be making, putting it through your banking app, 160 million to, I don't even know who that's going to, but yeah, it's such a strange situation because without those point deductions, they'd be on what, about 37 points, 36 points, and that's home and dry pretty much. And yet they're still pretty much in the dark with that aspect, but just focusing on the football terms, scored the second least amount of goals in the Premier League, and that's your problem right there in itself. They have no goals whatsoever. I mean, Beto's been brought in to be the knight in shining armour, and he's come in wearing bloody Rockport and one Timberland boot on either foot. And they paid a decent amount for him as well, but hasn't that been just the story at Everton over the last, 6 years? Just completely inept when it comes to spending money, no strategy, no real thought through process of this is the play we need to fit the mold of how we want to play. And now it's a case of quickly let's get a plaster to fit over the mold of trying to get a goal scorer in, because Calvert-Lewin, he was almost propping the club up in the last, well, the 2 years in which he had that amazing spell of scoring, 16 goals in the Premier League. As soon as that dried up, they've just lost complete hope. I mean, even Anthony Gordon, when he was there, I really liked him when he was there and he was giving them a lot of output. And then as soon as he's gone, I'm starting to think, was it even worth him being allowed to leave now? Because because he's a local guy as well, he actually brought a little bit of enthusiasm and a little bit of hope to their team, I feel like. As soon as he went, it just feels like they've got nothing else to cheer for anymore. And I'm quite worried for them, because if they get beat by Nottingham Forest in the next game, is gonna, and Luton get a result in their next game as well, honestly, with the way the momentum's going and how little goals they have in their team, I actually do worry for him. I think it's going to go down to the final couple of games, and that's going to be nervy times for Everton fans.
Well, Jared Branthwaite joined Dominic Calvert-Lewin in being injured last night. Nathan Patterson also went off injured. So that is three senior players injured. So you're talking about bright sparks there, and former bright sparks in Calvert-Lewin and Gordon, who has since moved on. But Branthwaite has been probably their best player this season, and he's out injured as well. Might not only be the end of his season for Everton, but also dashes his chance of a potential spot with England at the Euros, which was a shame. I do want to touch upon that game against Forest on Sunday, though, because that is absolutely massive. It was massive already, but by losing 6-0, the goal differences of Everton and Forest, Marley, are now identical. You mentioned about how a 5-goal swing can be wiped out in one match week. Well, it was wiped out in one night for Everton. Losing to Chelsea, fine. Chelsea are above Everton in the table. Maybe most people expected that result at Stamford Bridge last night, but probably didn't expect 6-0. We associate with Sean Dyche, a team that is hard to break down, hard to beat, defensively resolute. They weren't last night. They were porous. They were awful. They do have a game in hand over Nottingham Forest. They are a point ahead of Nottingham Forest. But things like goal difference, when the Premier League table across the board has been so tight this season, are really important. The combined age of Everton's right-hand side last night was about 75 years of age. Seamus Coleman and Ashley Young. I mean, I'm not being funny. They're two great pros. And you know what? I have so much respect for them for still playing at a top level. And if the manager says, I want you to play, of course you're going to play as a professional. And of course you're going to play at the highest level you can for as long as you can. So I don't begrudge the players. But I do sometimes question Sean Dyche's thinking that in a Premier League match, and I know you need experience to help you through these relegation battles and help you through a season, I totally get that. But on the right-hand side, you've got 38-year-old Ashley Young and 36-year-old, I think, Seamus Coleman against Mykhailo Mudryk. That's not going to work. It's the situation with the money. Everton have hamstrung themselves. They've snookered themselves massively because they've overspent. They can't spend now. The club's in a black hole with points deductions, not once but twice this season. Problems with loans from a potential investor, 777 Partners. We spoke about them about a year ago on Football Social Daily. I remember me and Joel did a bit of a deep dive into them and the clubs they own and what it might be like. And yet they are still struggling to get the ratification they need to become the owners of Everton. Farhad Moshiri has been hounded out of that football club because he spent so recklessly and frivolously. It's put Everton in a terrible position. So I don't know if I feel sorry for Sean Dyche, because last night is absolutely on him. You need to be making sure your players don't perform like that, especially in a relegation fight. And I know that there are a lot of Evertonians that would happily see Sean Dyche sacked. But I also think, who can Everton realistically afford to bring in that would help keep them up? And secondly, they won't sack Sean Dyche because they would have to sever his contract, which would mean that's a bigger outlay for the club financially, which they just simply cannot afford to do right now, in my opinion. So I think Everton have completely snookered themselves. And I was thinking this before doing today's podcast, they're weak. I don't mean weak as in the players are weak or their mentality's weak. Just Everton as a football club are weak. There's no pillars of strength in that football club aside from the supporters. That is it. Everything else is just soft.
And what have the supporters got to support?
Absolutely.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who scored 2 goals, won a penalty that should have been saved, and a deflection off a goalkeeper in 28 games.
The saying, between a rock and a hard place, is what springs to mind. Because I think Everton are just lambs to the slaughter at the moment. They just can't do anything. They're completely frozen.
I honestly think that the future is so bleak for Everton. I can't see a way that this gets better, because with outside investment, you can't spend it as you want. You've got this stadium, which you could argue they needed, but is anybody desperate for a new stadium? I know Goodison's old and stuff, but you know, they made plans that were, in my opinion, were way ahead of where they are as a club. We want this amazing all-singing, dancing stadium, but in the short term, it's better to spend that money on your squad over the next 5, 6, 7 years or whatever it may take. Because in the summer, like, for example, if they sacked Sean Dyche, they would need to pay him with money they haven't got. So then they would have to sell a player. And who have they got that they could sell for big money? They've got Jarrad Branthwaite, who they could sell. Onana. And that's probably it. Maybe Pickford, but Doucouré is like nearly 30. So he might get 10 million, 15 million. Pickford might get 20, 25 because goalies last a bit longer. Branthwaite might get you 50 off pure hype, even though he's never a £50 million player. And then you've got Onana, who's been linked with big money moves to possibly Man United, possibly, you know, some other top six club. But in my opinion, I've not seen enough of him to suggest he can play at that level. But his age is right to sort of make a bit of money on him. So if they then sell all them, where do they invest it? And would you trust, I wouldn't trust Everton to spend £10 of my money. Never mind 100 million on transfers and trying to reform a team if they do decide to go backwards before they can go forward. And then you've got the PSR breaches. Like, how close are they to PSR problems in future? Are they having fell foul of them twice this season? You know, how close are they now? Are they clear of it? We don't know. But if they aren't, then that even negates, you know, if they've got 25 million that they need to find, all of a sudden, if they sell Onana for 50 million, that halves what you've got for him because you've only got 25 million to then spend on a replacement. And then you're just where you were before. So what, you know, and then you've got the stadium to repay and the, you know, the debtors to pay back. It's honestly a mess. I do feel sorry for the fans because the club has been mismanaged massively in the past probably decade. And I think the decision to go all out with Ancelotti and James Rodriguez, that's where it started because that's where this financial investment was. That was the gamble. That was them going all in.
Ancelotti, I think, was the highest paid manager in the Premier League at the time.
Exactly. And it was beyond their means. That the highest paid manager in the league should never work for Everton Football Club. I'm sorry, you're just not that. You're not that pull. You're not Man City. I know you want to get there, and that's admirable. But ultimately, Everton, they're an also-ran in the league.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, there's no other reason Ancelotti would have taken that job at Goodison Park. Ancelotti wouldn't have been managing Everton had there not been a sizable pay packet to go along with it. And actually thinking of the manager situation, over the last 15 games, Everton are in the bottom three in terms of form, Joel. They are in relegation form. And yes, you can add 8 points onto their position in the league table and their total so far, and that would paint a completely different picture. But the last 6 to 8 weeks have been absolutely dire if you're an Evertonian. The football has been hard to watch. The results haven't been there. Even that much needed victory over Burnley last weekend was courtesy of a Burnley mistake. So you're talking about a team that are really struggling at the moment, and this is not a time of the season to be hitting terrible form.
Yeah, this scenario that there is just, it was so inevitable. It's just the culmination of just poor mismanagement for the last 4 or 5 years, pretty much. And although I know Everton fans, when Dyche was actually hired, they were so against it, and I get it, but in the way in which it's going, he's probably the best guy to take them down if they ever do go down. Because right now, they are, it's the saying, isn't it? Beggars can't be choosers. That is literally what they are right now. They're in a situation where 5 years ago, it was looking upwards with Ancelotti, and now it's just completely looking down with Sean Dyche. If Sean Dyche is coming into your side, you're not looking to get into Europe. You're not looking to try and breach the top eight. You're looking to become a steady Eddie Palace. And I think that's actually disrespect to Palace, to be honest, because I think they're a bit well run compared to Everton are. They're even worse than that. They're just not even steady. They're turbulent. They've been turbulent for the last 5 years now. And looking at their fixtures as well, they've got the Merseyside derby next week. They could potentially lose back-to-back games in the next 10 days. And I genuinely have no hope for them coming in terms of winning a game in the last 6 games, because like I said at the start, they've got no goals in their team whatsoever. And that's the main game of football, isn't it? So I just don't see a way out for them. And I think they have the best guy at the helm if they are to go down.
Based off that performance, you can't see them staying up. But we also know Everton do have better performances in them and an ability to grind out results, albeit we haven't seen that for the last 3 months. But after they got that initial points deduction, but for that Garnacho stunner in the first game against Manchester United that kind of halted them in their tracks, after that, they went on that crazy run and won a load of games. It's one of those seasons in the Premier League where it's so difficult to predict what might happen next. Everton have also appealed their most recent points deduction. And Sean Dyche was speaking after the game and said that everyone in football wants the situation to be resolved before the final weekend of the season. I'm glad that he's in the same boat. And even though it might cost his team a spot in the Premier League, he is quite keen to see the outcome and the resolution of this situation before the end of the campaign. That's why it's so difficult to predict, not only because everyone slips up left, right and centre, Marley, but also because you've got this whole appeal situation and you just don't know who to choose when it comes to who's going to stay up or who's going to slip to the Championship.
If you ask me now, who would you back to keep Everton in the Premier League? Beto starting at centre forward or some bloke hearing an appeal and giving a decision? I'd probably say I'd put my chances on the guy giving us two or three points back off the appeal. Because they don't look like they can get themselves out of this. And the game against Forest is insanely massive, massive game. Probably the biggest game in Everton's past 10 years. Maybe more, maybe ever, who knows? Because they've always been a Premier League team. They're one of the very few teams that has never been relegated from the Premier League. And they might well slip because... You know, you look at Luton every week and they're trying every week. Everyone's giving everything. They're struggling with injuries and they get beat. Sometimes they get beat heavy. But it's with Everton, it's just like they give, I don't know whether they're giving everything and they just haven't got much or whether their heads are going a little bit and they're just in a terrible rut of form, but they need to get over that because time is running out. There's 6 or 7 games left. And like Joel said, you know, can you see them winning any game? You know, who knows?
Not based off of last night's performance, no. I can't, especially not against Forest at the weekend. But Sean Dyche needs to get a reaction out of his players. If he doesn't on Sunday, then those alarm bells will be ringing even louder than they already are.
That's big, because Forest don't travel well, and Everton need their fans to get them through that big time. That'll be a really, really good game. Well, it'll be a terrible game to watch, but it'll be a really big game.
Well, it's not just a big game against Forest because, as Joel mentioned earlier, there's still the Merseyside derby. If you look at their final 6 games of the season, starts with Forest on Sunday, then it's Goodison on Wednesday night, the following week against Liverpool, home again against Brentford, also around them in the table, Luton away, Sheffield United at home, and Arsenal away on the final day. So they've got 2 teams in the title race to play. But the other games they've got, Forest, Luton, Brentford and Sheffield United.
You've got to get at least 9 points from them.
Because if you lose one of those games, let's just say Everton lose to Forest, they won't beat Liverpool, I can't imagine. So if they lose those 2 games and then they lose to Brentford, those final 3 games, Luton, Sheffield United and Arsenal. I mean, how sick will the Everton fans feel if they end up losing 2 or 3 games in a row now and those final 3, Luton, Sheffield United and Arsenal... to survive in the Premier League with everything on the line. I know they did it before under Lampard in those final games of the season, but it's hard to see them doing it again based off of how everyone feels around the club. There's a real grey cloud over Goodison Park at the moment.
I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Luton against Everton at the Kenny. Be there, buy your ticket. That's going to be like the thriller in Manila, that one.
What great Premier League we've got going into the final 6 games.
It is, but also, massive caveat, massive asterisk, the amount of points deductions has ruined the whole thing.
Without it, Nottingham and Everton would be thinking about the strawberry daiquiris they'd be drinking in the summertime, not having to fend off Luton Town in the final days of the season.
Sean Dyche drinks diesel.
Diesel and gravy concoction.
That's it for Football Social Daily today. Dark time. Times for Everton, both on and off the pitch. I do hope that they get a resolution both to their ownership situation and these points deductions as soon as they can, because it's sad to see a club so historic be put through the ringer like that. As for Chelsea, they are now hot on the heels of Manchester United and Newcastle United for those European places. Who would have thought that with the season that Maurizio Pochettino's side have had?
We'll be back tomorrow for another episode of Football Social Daily. So hit subscribe or follow, and that way you'll never miss an episode again. Links to the social media channels are in the description, where you can find Joel's opinion on the easiest 6 points in the Premier League every season. So go and check out the socials for that one. I won't give away any more.
We've already taken a hell of a lot of punters from someone. The weirdest comment saying, "That's a strange Manchester accent," or something like that. I don't even know what that even means. Does he think I'm from London or something?
Maybe
I'm
he was confused. Talking about me, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Who knows? So. But you can check out our social channels, as I say, by clicking those links, and click the link to join the free Telegram group as well. There's always conversation in there about the latest Premier League news and opinion. But from us on today's FSD, that's it. Myself, Joel and Marley, will catch you on the next one. See you then.
Football Social Daily is a VoiceWorks sport production for the Sport Social Podcast Network.